Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, grandmother, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Sarah. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. Thanks for being here today. What's on your mind today?
Well, Sarah, today is my daughter Kelly's 24th birthday. So I'm a little bit distracted because I'm thinking about her and wishing that I could be spending the day with her celebrating and, I don't know, just hanging out. But she's busy in Chicago, and I know that she's busy with her friends, so I'm happy for her. But as part of our family tradition, I also recount the birthing journey with my girls on their birthdays every year. So I start by texting them at the time that my labor started years ago, and then I update them throughout the night saying, here's where we were at hour 25. Here's what your dad and I are doing. So it's kind of this ongoing reminder to them that although it is their birthday, it is also my birthday experience. And they made me a mom by arriving here in the world. But at the same time, I want them to know that it was a process, that they didn't just show up in a little, you know, basket or in a stork's bundle, that there was a whole event. And it's interesting because both girls' births, and I'm not going to tell their birth stories, but they came into the world very much like their personalities. Kirsten's was long and slow, my older daughter, who's 34. It was 36 hours of labor, but it never really got super intense and just kind of all finished. And here was my mellow daughter, who has kind of been that same pace all of her life. And then Kelly, on the other hand, the night before I went into real active labor, there was some strange storm that blew through, kind of something you'd imagine when before Mary Poppins arrives. But there was this really strange storm, and everything got kind of warm and windy and dark, and things were blowing around. It was just strange. And then the kids were playing in the backyard, my daughter and her friends, and one of the friends kicked a soccer ball through the window into the house. It was a lot of chaos. And then we kind of went through the night. And the next day, kind of labor hit hard and it was intense. And then Kelly arrived, and it's been that experience raising Kelly for 24 years of kind of intense and a whirlwind, and a bit like Mary Poppins is going to fly in at any moment. That's where my mind is. I'm really thinking about that experience and also thinking about kind of the whole process of becoming a mom, what changed in my life or in me when I became a mother. Becoming a mom is a long process. I'll make it personal. It was a long process for me. I didn't have it my first baby and then was all of a sudden filled with all of these maternal instincts and maternal knowledge, knowing what to do. I was actually gravely disappointed because I thought through the process of giving birth that I would immediately have this glow around me, you know, that mother glow that you would hope that you have, and I didn't. And it took me a while to grow into the whole role and into the work. I mean, I had that fierce protective sense the minute she was born, but kind of growing into myself and knowing who I was a process. And I think part of it was that I don't think I was fully awake to my life until I had children. I think I was only partially here, partially invested. You know, I kind of had gone through everything and gotten married and finished college and done all the steps. But after I had Kirsten, a few years later, when I went back to get my master's, one of the projects that we had was to look at some literature and write about an experience that connects to it. And I wrote about the Velveteen Rabbit because I connected that story of the Velveteen Rabbit becoming real when he was loved by the child. And I've always felt that sense that I didn't become real until I had my first child. And I don't know if that makes sense to anyone, but that's the way it resonated for me, that becoming a mom made me feel real. And I had this primal awakening, this sense of responsibility, you know, not just for my own children, but for everyone's children. You know, if I was any place and a baby cried or a child reached out, I would perk up. And that hasn't changed, you know, for 34 years, 35 years now. If I hear a child in distress, I feel like I'm on alert. I feel like this is part of my responsibility. I'm part of that tribal experience of mothers and motherhood. And I feel this primal responsibility to the environment and to Mother Earth. And I have to say, Sarah, that after George Floyd was murdered, and in the reports, they talked about him calling out to his mama as he was dying, I'm having a hard time telling the story now, because that sense of that mother in me feeling like I feel like I should have been there. Like when he was calling out, part of me feels like I needed to, why didn't I fly in? Why was I not in there? And I think mothers all over may feel that same way, that it calls into us this sense of I have a greater responsibility to people and things that are way beyond me. And as much as I love and nurture my girls and my granddaughter, and I feel a global sense of motherhood responsibility. And unlike a lot of my friends that I grew up with, I graduated from high school in 1979. So that was right there on the cusp of the second wave of feminism. And so my cohort of friends all were about getting into college and finding a career, and things had opened up and Title IX, and there were scholarships and, you know, opportunities to be whoever you wanted to be. And unlike most of my friends, my only really solid plan was that I wanted to get married and have a family. Like that was my solid plan going into college. And yes, all my friends teased me that I was there to get my MRS degree, and, you know, kind of that I had no real worth or value. Wasn't there anything else I wanted other than to be a mom? But it really was my focus. And so raising my children has been, you know, and that's why in my introduction, I talk about being a wife and a mom. Those are still my primary roles that I see. And I've grown into other things, you know, grown into being a marriage and family therapist, grown into being a professor at Poly, grown into other jobs that I've had. And I've developed and changed. And all through the process, I've also developed and changed as a mom. So that's where my mind is at today, because I, in all honesty, profoundly miss raising my girls still. I profoundly miss being part of their activities and seeing them every morning and watching them grow. But at the same time, I love who they are today. Two of my favorite people on the planet that I get to spend time with. You know, that's just remarkable to me that you would raise two little humans and then they end up being some of your favorite company in the world. And so that feels like a gift as well. So on this day of my daughter Kelly's birthday, I feel like I, of course, received the greatest gift. And I know that a lot of moms feel the same way. So today I thought we would talk about kind of those changes that accompany us when we become moms. And it's not Mother's Day, I know that, but it's birthday of mothers for me here. So that's where my mind is. And I see where we are right now in the world, and it's calling on mothers and the mothering instincts that we have, men and women. I think we all have some pull to that maternal, to that feminine that we need to tap into, or maybe we are feeling ourselves tap into that feminine resonating inside of us, saying care for others. I hear it. I know I'm not the only one. You know, we have to care for others. We have to look at the collective and not just think about our own journey and our own experience. But at the same time, we have to honor our own experiences and what's happening right now in order to be able to help and be there for the collective. Because if we ignore how we're feeling today, if we ignore the struggles that we're having, then it's too noisy in our heads to be able to do anything else. So there's a twofold assignment: to acknowledge how you've changed since the pandemic and since the world erupted as it has, to acknowledge it and recognize, and then at the same time say, and that is what it is, and here's what I can do to be part of the collective. So although We can't open the phones like we have in the past because life changes and we are adapting. You can still be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-549-8855. That's 805-549-8855. And Sarah will be happy to share your question or comment with me. You can also be part of the conversation by sharing your thoughts on our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. There's a picture of me and my girls up today. On our Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and look for a conversation with a reluctant therapist. All 10 years of shows are somehow available, magically still there. And if you'd like to podcast and keep up with the program, just go to wherever you get your podcast, look for a conversation with a reluctant therapist, hit subscribe, and the show will be there every week for you to listen at your convenience. And if you'd like to reach out, you can also send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. So I'm not sure where we'll end up today. I have a little bit of sense of where we're going, but I look forward to sharing more thoughts about the journey of motherhood and motherhood in the time of the pandemic. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment to continue the conversation. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
With your loving, there ain't nothing that I can't adore. The way I'm running with you, honey, means we can break every law. I find it funny that you're the only one I never looked for. There is something in your loving that tears down my walls. I wasn't ready then, I'm ready now. I'm heading straight for you. You will only be eternally.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today I'm reflecting a bit about mothering and motherhood and what that looks like for me. And also, I tapped into a couple of my other favorite moms and asked them to share their thoughts about motherhood and how they changed when they became mothers. I asked my daughter, Kirsten, who is the mother of my 5-year-old granddaughter, Georgia, and then also my friend, Megan Englert. And Megan has been on the show a few times. She is actually the founder of Out of the Box Parenting. She's a mother of a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old and is a parenting wizard. And so one of my favorite people to chat with. And I don't know if you're ready, Sarah, for this, but I'd like to start with KB, my daughter, Kirsten, talking a bit about her transformation into motherhood.
When I first had my daughter, the immediate change in me was noticeable because I looked around and all I could see were other humans that mothers birthed, and it was profound. I never looked outside of myself the same way again because I felt like I joined this really cool, powerful club of motherhood, and it made me feel like I was kind of initiated into adulthood and in a really special way. And so right away, from the minute I gave birth, it felt like I was thrust into motherhood and adulthood. And so it changed me and kind of gave me a sense of maturity that I always was wondering, like, when am I going to feel like a grown-up? But then I felt like a grown-up as soon as I had my daughter. After that, as I went through challenges of actual mothering, I gained a lot of confidence. You get through a challenge or worry about your kid or, you know, overcome something difficult, and you realize that you could do it. And obviously, I lean on my husband for all of it. And so it also bonded my marriage and strengthened my marriage and still does every day, which is really awesome. So that's something that's how it's changed me, is feeling more confident and stronger with every year. I've changed also in that I've totally reprioritized my free time. My husband and I used to be really social, and we still are relatively social and like to spend time with good friends. But, having a child, really, when you're squeezing in work and parenting and family and relationships, it completely restructured my free time. So I really don't have the same free time for girlfriends like I used to. And I am okay with that, because this is the path that our family is on. And I feel like this is the choice that we need to be making for the stage of our life right now. So I spend less time with friends, more time with immediate family, in-laws. Family has become, you know, where we spend our vacation time. And so, yeah, our
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and that was my eldest daughter, Kirsten Barrett, talking a little bit about how her life changed as she became a mom. And that's our theme today, because it is my younger daughter, Kelly's 24th birthday. And so I'm thinking a lot about her and just about mothers everywhere and that process, how our life changes profoundly when we bring another human into the world. And so my little human has zoomed into the show today. So I'm going to take this opportunity to say happy birthday to my Kelly.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks for having me.
On both counts, on the show and in life in general.
Yes. What kind of birthday would it be if I didn't recognize the person we should be celebrating, which is you, for birthing me?
Well said. All right. So how are you spending your day?
Well, I'm in law school, so I've been in class, and we had our first snow in Chicago yesterday. So it's very dreary and cold. I've been taking class from bed, and my roommate is cooking me a birthday dinner, but nothing really crazy, because I do have class until 9 p.m. and we are in a pandemic. So that's my plan.
And so how have things for you changed in the pandemic? I mean, obviously your plans have changed. You can't go into the classroom for law school, but just kind of overall, do you feel as hopeful and excited about life as you were when you set out to Chicago?
I think with regards to my pursuits, being in law school, nothing there has changed. I've been pretty laser focused on being here and doing this for a while. So I'm very excited about that. I think if anything's changed, it's been more getting comfortable with the amount of time that I spend with myself and really making the most of time that I'm with other people. I think the most notable thing of living through a pandemic was I lived at home for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty significant. I think being home with you and dad and the whole family and all the cats really got me ready to be here and be back in Chicago, totally, you know, working through this next chapter.
Well, I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you today, and thank you for zooming in to say, hey, and I won't sing to you now, but I will sing to you later.
Have a great show. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Cal. That was my daughter, Kelly Barrett. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we are talking about mothers and what that feels like to transition to motherhood. And so I also have a friend who has joined us on Zoom today, Dr. Carrie Langer from Cal Poly. We are colleagues in the Child Development Psychology Department. And so Carrie, one of my favorite moms, because we've spent a lot of time in the hallway over the last 10 years talking about.
Yeah, I missed that, seeing you.
We had some of our most profound conversations kind of passing to the copy room. So how have you been, before I ask you about how you've changed as a mom, how have you been in your mothering role through the pandemic, since that is where we are right now?
I think the transition that's been the hardest has been the one as a parent, just because for kids, it's been such a radical change. where almost all of their lives are centered around the school. And I think so there's kind of helping them to cope with that has been challenging. But the biggest challenge is just the logistics of trying to work from home, parents having Zoom meetings at different times, kids having different Zoom meetings. I was just noticing the other day, we've gone through so many sets of headphones because I don't know what the wear and tear is that they're bringing to the situation. But it's like we're always having to shift who's borrowing whose headphones, and then I'm ordering more. I think, you know, I always appreciated teachers. I think we as teachers know, right, about our specialization. But I'm really seeing it firsthand now as I try to do what I can to help them with their online schooling. And I think just coping with, actually, I spoke with my mom about this, and she was telling me I needed to relax a little bit, not try to be a perfectionist right now, which I don't think I was anywhere near being a perfectionist, but she was pointing out they're healthy, they're fed, you know, try to calm down. But, you know, it's every day you're realizing kind of the ways in which it would be better if they were with their teachers and their peers. So I think, yeah, that piece has been the hardest. I certainly miss my friends, seeing all of you all at work, and just having that daily routine. I really miss that a lot as well.
I know. And I miss the getting out of my house to actually go somewhere part of the routine of my day. But I'm wondering, because I don't have my children at home now, everyone, you know, has left again. Do you have to hide in the shower to cry now, or do you go in the car and shut the door? Like, you know, those mom moments, do you have them, and how do you pull that
off? Those are sounding like great ideas that I hadn't thought of. I think because we are fostering some kittens right now, which I thought would be like a great pandemic activity. It has been for me. One of my kids is kind of into it. The other one just hasn't been as interested as I thought she would be. But we have our one room in the house kind of barricaded where the foster kittens are so that they don't interact with our bigger cats. And so actually I have been spending a lot of time just coming in here and hanging out with the kittens, and that has been very therapeutic. But yeah, we're in a small house, so there are not a whole lot of options.
Yeah, I remember when the kids were young, locking myself in the car every now and then, turning the music up and kind of quietly crying, and then being able to come back in and do my thing. And it's interesting that it's the fostering of the kitties, like that maternal instinct that when everything starts to feel chaotic, I will turn to caring for others. And Kelly, actually, when she got to Chicago, one of the first things that she called and said is, I can't be here without an animal. I have to have a pet. And so she's fostering a cat as well. So I think, again, there's something about that innate feminine that we tap into and start having to care for things greater than ourselves.
You just reminded me of there's that response to the fight or flight work that's called tend and befriend, right? And
I don't know that.
It's a stress response. And it's so interesting because, you know, when I teach health psych, we still talk a lot about the fight or flight response in the body. And certainly I've been experiencing a lot of that during this period of time, but I really hadn't been thinking about that other piece, which is how do we engage in caregiving and connection as a stress response? And I have noticed that the times I'm feeling better, it's because I'm, you know, volunteering for get out the vote activities, or I'm, you know, chatting with friends. So, yeah, I think we can put the caretaking of cats in that category too.
And that's interesting. I haven't heard that connected to the fight or flight. Can you talk a little bit more how that works with it?
Yeah. So, the kind of classic work around stress response really looks at this idea that we think we're all familiar with, where you can feel it in your body when you're having that stress response, where your body is getting ready to either fight something that's going to attack you or run away as quickly as you can. So moving all that, you know, energy into your limbs, perhaps taking a break from digesting your food, or being able to procreate. Those are long-term kind of concerns that don't matter if I'm trying to outrun a predator. So the idea that our bodies were built that way, you know, over a long period of time, we still have these responses, even when it's something that might seem kind of silly, right? It's not a mountain lion that's attacking me. It's a midterm I have tomorrow, right? Or something like that. And so there was a later set of work that came out where this theorist was pointing out that she felt a lot of the kind of feminine perspective had been missing. So she calls it tend and befriend, just, I guess, to have sort of like a fight or flight, you know, have that nifty little rhyme in there. And looks at that idea of how we reach out to others when we're stressed. And that actually is something that's really adaptive, even in our current right circumstances, as opposed to fight or flight, where, yeah, that's helpful. If I'm about to get hit by a bus, I would like to be able to startle quickly and get out of the way. But if this is happening chronically, right, like I have too much work to do, I don't have support taking care of my kids, I can't pay the bills, right? Those kind of chronic stressors, it's really bad over the long run to keep having those physiological responses. Whereas connection with others, I guess to a point, right? Maybe not wearing yourself out, but right, making sure that you're both caring for others and receiving that care.
The tend and befriend is almost like, I'm thinking of ACT, the commitment therapy, where you acknowledge that things are that they are, but then you commit to taking an action, which would be to tend to yourself or others, and then befriend yourself and others.
Yeah, that's really an interesting connection. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, again, we're all just kind of figuring out this new place and how we're going to normalize what doesn't feel normal for our children. Because that's the thing that I kept wanting to tell my friends with younger children, is that they don't know any other normal except for the normal you present to them. So we may be mourning the loss of the things that we look forward to with our children, or, you know, the traditions you might have, or even around Halloween, which is coming up. And we're mourning and wanting it to be there for them because we're projecting that onto them. But at the same time, if we normalize something different, they are so accepting. Children are so accepting. I think that's so important for us as mothers to recognize, because that pain of seeing your child disappointed is overwhelming.
Yeah. I had an experience yesterday actually that fits with that, where I let my kids know we have a family that's coming in from out of town that we've sort of potted with, I guess, for lack of a better word. So we both have been pretty kind of limiting our social contact in general, but they're coming through town, and their younger son will also be here with us for Halloween. And so I just let them know that instead of trick-or-treating, we're going to be doing Halloween baskets, and we'll do a treasure hunt in the backyard. And I didn't know how it was going to go, but my youngest daughter was immediately excited, right? This sounded good to her, and she jumped right on board. So I didn't really have to go into much of an explanation about why we weren't going to be trick-or-treating. But it's interesting, right? I had it in the back of my head because I'm kind of wondering, right, are they going to be super bummed about this? I think the main thing is they miss seeing their friends. And so I just try to validate that when it comes up. But yeah, it's hard not to kind of jump ahead of where they are sometimes.
Right. And I think that's one of the challenges. As much as I love being a parent, I love being a mom, the pain that can go along with dealing with sadness that they're experiencing, or when they're hurt, is just so overwhelming that you think, oh, I understand the instinct to want to bubble wrap everyone. And we can't right now. And in some ways, the best thing we can do is try to take the bubble wrap away a little bit and allow our children to show us that they're way more resilient than we give them credit for. That, you know, we have had a very easy ride for the last many, many decades, and this is kind of real life. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest today is Dr. Carrie Langer, a professor at Cal Poly in the Psychology and Child Development Department, and also a friend and a mother of two. And we're sharing our thoughts about what it was to become mothers and how mothering has changed and parenting through the pandemic. And although our phone lines aren't open, you can still call in and share a comment or a question, 805-549-8855. If you can share your comment or question, Sarah will let me know and we'll be able to make you a part of the conversation in that way. We're going to take a quick break and be back. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Never picture myself singing lullabies, sitting in a rocking chair in the middle of the night, in the quiet, in the dark. You're stealing every bit of my heart with your daddy's eyes. What a sweet.
Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And that was a song by Adele that I hadn't heard before that I just love. So I am not sure what's happening, but Sarah's going to help me out here.
That was the song by Carrie Underwood, Adele we played first.
Oh, well, then that's even better. Thank you for letting me know.
You're welcome.
The first song that we played today was Adele, and I love that song. And that was Carrie Underwood singing about becoming a mom. And we are talking about becoming a mom. And, you know, it's never perfect, is it? Everything in life is pretty messy. And if we've learned anything over the course of the last 6 months, 7 months, is that we have to be willing to accept things that are messy and not perfect and not as we expected them to be. And Carrie was mentioning earlier when we first started talking that her mom reminded her not to work on being such a perfectionist with the kids at this time. And that made me think of my conversation with my daughter, Kirsten, when we were talking about how her life has changed since the pandemic. And so let's take a moment and listen to my daughter, Kirsten Barrett, talk about her changes since the pandemic started.
Parenting during the pandemic, the first few months felt like an extended summer vacation for us. And I felt myself kind of lightening up on discipline and structure. And it felt like some sort of, holiday from reality at the beginning for us. We were really fortunate to be able to work from home and have the support of family. And so it felt like we were on vacation together, squeezing in work and doing, you know, getting our responsibilities met, but also having these special family dinners every night. And we gained time back without commuting. And so we kind of relaxed and took a deep breath and just enjoyed each other. But in terms of parenting, that made it so that we were a little bit relaxed with parenting. Bedtime got later, didn't enforce our boundaries as much as we normally would, kind of let everybody eat whatever they wanted more than usual. And so we kind of reined that in as we approached the fall and started school again. And we've brought the bedtime back to a healthy hour of 7 o'clock. And that's really helped, it reinforced why we have certain boundaries and guidelines for our child and how important they've been, you know, having a routine and a structure. So I would say our parenting changed at the beginning, but it actually, what it's done is just reinforced what really mattered to us as parents, because there's a reason you do it, even if for us as adults, the world is a little bit uncertain still, and our schedules are still different. Having a routine and an early bedtime and boundaries is incredibly helpful as a parent. So I would say overall, our parenting has just come full circle by the end of this. Although we're still in the middle of the pandemic, so we'll see, you know, in 6 months how that goes.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and that was my daughter Kirsten Wojtowicz talking about how life has changed for her with the pandemic. And my guest here today is also Carrie Langer, Dr. Carrie Langer from Cal Poly. And my daughter Kelly Barrett is also sitting in with us. It's her birthday, and so I get to stare at her for an hour on Zoom as my birthday gift to myself. But Carrie, let's talk about that process of becoming a mom. You know, how did you change? As I mentioned at the top of the show, that was pretty much my only life plan, was getting married and having kids when I was young. So how was that process for you?
It's interesting. I love hearing other people's stories about transitioning to parenthood, because it helps, I think, me to reflect on mine. I was never really sure that I would have children. My mom always talked about it very positively. But I think that when I was in college in my 20s, I didn't really want to be pushed into like a particular stereotype. So I almost over resisted it. And I was just very focused, right, on career, friends. And I'm so glad that I got to do a lot of the adventures that I did do in my 20s, you know, having kids a little bit later. But I think that was a big challenge for me initially, was how do you integrate the parts of yourself? Taking care of my babies felt very intuitive and natural. But I think, you know, those transitions that many of us struggle with in terms of how do I juggle work and caregiving, how do you negotiate with your partner the different responsibilities? That's where I think a lot of the challenges came in. And I think I'm still working, right, on those things, given that my kids are elementary school age, so, you know, less intense than their toddler years for sure. But I think those are things I'm still figuring out. How do I kind of fit all these bits and pieces when there are only so many hours in the day?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, the kids are, it's very easy for them to take priority, and it's very hard to figure out where to carve out little pieces for yourself. That's been my experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting, because one of the other young moms that I talked to before the show, Megan Englert, she's started a program called Out of the Box Parenting. And I think we have her talking about her transition into becoming a mom. And I think it aligns a bit with yours. If it's available, Sarah, let's go ahead and hear what Megan Englert had to say about her transition to becoming a mom.
How have I changed since becoming a mom? Well, first of all, it feels like it's been forever. You know, like I've always been a mom, right? But it also feels like yesterday, like when did I become an adult? So, you know, aside from losing track of time, I've also lost track of my patience. So I used to pride myself in my patience. I thought I had a whole lot of it. And I realized that now, you know, before I didn't have a 24/7 forever job. And now I do. And I'm grateful for it, don't get me wrong. But it's definitely taken a toll on my patience and my ability to restore and recharge my patience. But at least now I am more aware of where that level is and how best to get that way, to get to a more patient level. Let's see. I require more solo time than I used to. I used to be able to recharge with, you know, a bike ride or going to the beach or hanging out with friends for like even 15 minutes. That was enough for me to just be like, cool, I'm good. I could keep going. But now I have to have a quiet house, meaning no one is in it but me, and no sounds, and just at least 10 minutes of that, and I'm good. Just dead silence for 10 minutes looking out the window. And I never thought I'd be the person who would do that or need that in order to be good for the day. So that's definitely a change since before. Let's see.
So that was Megan Englert, founder of Out of the Box Parenting, talking about her transition, Carrie. And that sounded a bit familiar to you. You were nodding your head as she was talking.
Yeah, definitely. I think that piece about having more awareness of, or, and even more need for solo time, that has definitely been my experience. And I'm still, I think, trying to figure that out. It's particularly challenging during the pandemic, right? When we're all here together. And, you know, there are a lot of positives that come with that, but definitely I have learned that I need more time alone than I realized. I think because when I was living by myself, or even when it was just me and my partner before we had kids, you just don't realize that you just have so much time during the day when you actually are by yourself. So you don't have to monitor that in the same way.
And that's, I go back to offering my get in the car and shut the doors and turn on your really good stereo. And it's funny because when we haven't bought a lot of cars, but we would buy a car, my primary goal was to have a really good stereo system because I knew that I would be sitting out there listening to music. Yes. To get my quiet time. So I was like my sanctuary. So feel free to borrow that. Yeah. But I also keep thinking about that other, the transition from, you know, who we were pre-children to becoming the mom, because I think, you know, years of counseling young mothers, one of the things they would talk about was, I can't wait to go back to feeling normal or my, like myself. And then I would have the crushing job of saying, you never go back. I hate to tell you this, but there is no going back to who you used to be. There's only moving forward into who you're becoming. And I think that that is a challenge for a lot of women in this modern world, that they've been told a story that you can work a full-time job, get married, throw a child into that mix, and everything just keeps humming along. And I think it causes a lot of postpartum depression. I think it sets women up for that.
I completely relate to that. And I was just thinking the other day, you know, looking forward to our talk, I was thinking about how this is sort of like another adolescence that people don't maybe warn you about, right? There's bodily changes, emotional changes, physical changes. And I do feel like I get stuck in that trap sometimes, like when I go back to the way I was. and I've really been consciously trying to look for examples, you know, of women in midlife and, you know, women in this stage of life, because I feel like we don't get much guidance or even just attention to these issues. And yeah, I think rather than experiencing maybe the downsides of my oldest child kind of entering adolescence and me going through this midlife stuff at the same time and it being a huge, ugly explosion, I'm hoping that I can find, you know, some inspiring and kind of positive things to look forward to as I, you know, continue to go through this transition. But it definitely has been very, I guess, disorienting and similar to what I remember of my teen years in that way.
Yes. And there is, and I wish I could find the term right in front of me, but there is some research talking about mother essence, like adolescence. And I can't put my fingers on it, but, you know, we talk about the fourth trimester, that after the child's born, there is this period of time that's 1 to 2 years that you go through the physical and emotional changes. And no one talks about the fourth trimester unless you're looking for that information. It doesn't come up during OBGYN appointments. And I think it's a huge disservice because carving that time out to move into that space sets us up to be more successful. And if we never get to acknowledge that I need to mourn a little bit, actually, who I was before I had children, and that feels wrong. It's like, if I mourn who I used to be, does that mean I'm a bad mom? It's like, no, we have to acknowledge that that was a part of my life that I loved. You said you loved all those adventures, and you have to be able to say goodbye to make space for who you're going to become.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking back to the conversation I had with my sister-in-law, and remember she was talking about when her first, she had her twins, and then a year and a half later, she had her son. And at that time, she experienced this kind of overwhelming grief. And it was actually, she was grieving having that alone time she had with the twins. And she very much was happy at the same time that Henry was born. But it was like coming back to the house and realizing that period of time was over and now we're a new formation. And yeah, I don't feel like we get a lot of education or information about those processes that are happening, I think, quite a bit through the transition to motherhood.
That's a really good point, because there is, I remember thinking, you know, I feel sorry for Kelly because I love Kirsten so much. And even though I can't wait to have a second child, I can't imagine that she'll be as great as Kirsten. And then you bring in this other person and you're blown away that you can grow in capacity. But there is kind of that change of the family dynamic and making space for a new person in your family dynamic.
Yeah, I remember thinking, when my younger daughter was born, like, I don't know why the math always makes me feel better if it evens out. Like, okay, I had 3 years alone time, you know, with my oldest. And then there's going to be this period of time. It'll just be different, right? She'll be a teenager and her older sister will be, you know, off doing whatever she's decided to do as an adult. And I think I did that same thing actually when I was kind of struggling with the transition from having been home full time to going back to work. And I would add up the number of waking hours she had. And it somehow, if I had half of those waking hours with me, I don't know why it was like a magic number. I could sort of soothe myself that, and I wasn't really particularly worried about her. It was more for me, right? Because she was going to the preschool on campus and I knew she was in wonderful hands at the Children's Center. It was more just for me and am I missing somehow, you know, I wanted to be two bodies. Like I want to work. I love when I'm at work and I want to be with her all the time. How do I, you know, sort that out?
Two completely compelling life experiences. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Dr. Carrie Langer, and we are talking about becoming mothers and mothering in the time of the pandemic. And I want to make sure we listen to Megan Englert's other comment that she left for me about mothering during the pandemic. And if you've got that ready, Sarah, let's listen to Megan Englert and about parenting.
And I'm just going off the cuff here. I haven't even thought about this or written down my answers because I don't know the answer, because I wake up every day sometimes thinking, is this real life? Is this what's happening? And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's up and down. It's definitely up and down. I'm definitely more overwhelmed. I definitely feel more stretched. I definitely have waves of just needing something. I don't know what it is, and just feeling really emotional about it because of everything that's happening with the world. And having to take care of these little people at the same time. It's been really hard to take care of myself and to want to take care of myself in the way that I used to be able to do, for them, you know, to be there for them. It's just a hard question to answer, I guess. I think I've been more creative in finding things for us to do. I've been a little bit more creative with flipping things to sound really fun and really cool because we can't like go anywhere and make things more exciting for them. Like for instance, for Halloween this week, we're not going trick-or-treating, you know, but we're going to go in the backyard and we're going to put our costumes on and we're going to go to our front door and we're going to knock on that door and trick-or-treat with Dad handing out candy, and then they're going to go to the back door and trick-or-treat with me handing out candy, and then we're going to go back in the backyard and change costumes and do it again and just keep changing costumes and we can't go to new doors, but we can change something to make it fun, you know, which I know works for my 5 and 3 year old and not so much for anybody older, because at some point Halloween is more social. But, you know, I've learned how to kind of make lemonade, I guess, in this time, in a way I didn't expect that I'd be able to do.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we are celebrating my daughter Kelly Barrett's 24th birthday by talking about becoming a mom and how that changes our lives, and also about parenting during the pandemic and how we can find peace with that in a really overwhelming time. And Carrie, at the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about how when George Floyd was murdered and he called out for his mama. And I, again, can hardly say it every time without choking up. And is it a universal thing that once you become a mom, all of a sudden you're everyone's mom? Do you feel that too?
I wonder about that too. I'm feeling that emotion right now as well. It's like, I think I only heard the audio from that clip. And I'll never forget that. And I've heard many, many people talking about that mom showing up for him. And I wonder about that because, you know, I have friends, you know, who are, I think they'll call it like childless by choice.
Yes. Yes. That is a thing.
Yes. Who really don't like it when people talk about in terms of like, oh, I never knew love until I had my child, like that it's sort of demeaning, right, of the experiences that people who don't have children have. But personally, I do think that my emotional experiences and just responses to, other people's children, that has really shifted for me. And I don't know if it was because I had to have firsthand experience with it. But I do feel like, you know, that particular trauma with George Floyd, us observing children who have been separated from their parents by this administration, I imagine I would be horrified by those things, even if I did not have children. But the emotional experience feels like it is tinged by, I guess feeling like a maternal feeling towards those people. And it's hard not to imagine your own child, I think, being in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I feel a lot of pain for the parents who've been separated from their children. I mean, just hearing about breastfeeding moms being separated from their infants, that is horrific. It's an atrocity. And I, you know, you can just imagine the physical and emotional pain of that, I think, based on, you know, experiences parenting.
And I think about the stories of mothers who have been able to lift a vehicle off of a child, you know, in moments of trauma, that there's a lot of strength that goes along with it. And yet I think that there's the feminine that lives in all of us, whether you've, you know, given birth or not, if you're a man or woman, however you identify, there is a feminine that resides in all of us. And I think it's a matter of awakening it. And at the beginning of the show, I also talked about how I felt like I was partially asleep most of my life until I had children, because it demanded of me a full awakening to the world because there's this person. But I think all of us have this dormant feminine that's waiting to be awoken to the world around us, because otherwise we're just resource workers who are making a paycheck, right? We're just participating as consumers, but we have to actively awaken that nurturing, feminine, embodied natural part of the natural world. And the benefit of giving birth is that it throws you into it. You are thrust into that feminine. But if you haven't had children, you can still awaken, I think, to that energy. But I think we're all required to awaken to it right now more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I was thinking, you know, I think many of us have had a variety of caregiving experiences. I was thinking about you know, being an older sibling and growing up with a younger sibling and what that means, right? The kind of caregiving we have for our siblings. But it's true that I think particularly, you know, maybe it's in this time and place, it felt that way to me as well, that you are thrown in 24/7. I live in a different state from my sister and my parents. So they, you know, came out initially to help me out. But I think it's very extreme here how much you're thrown into 24/7 caregiving. And many of us are not in a network that gives you, you know, that backup to get a break from it.
Yeah, we don't really have, you know, we talk about it takes a village to raise a child, but we don't really have that as a collective story anymore, I think, because we are so all in and everyone focusing on making a paycheck that we're not as all in. Like, we talk about our work environment and creating this good community with our work fellow workers, but we don't have the same thing, which was so inherent in my mom's experience, where then she had the co-op and the moms that she met with. And I think that that's really missing. And I think it's why a lot of moms feel so adrift, and maybe why moms feel so compelled to be engaged in their work life so heavily, because the mom part can feel really lonely and isolating if you don't have other moms. In some way, I wish we all lived in a big, I don't know, cul-de-sac.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there is that piece that we have to share. And as always, this hour goes so fast. Carrie, thank you so much for Zooming in and hanging out with me and talking about being a mom. And Kelly, thank you for spending an hour letting me stare at you. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for hanging out for this hour. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And if you missed this show, please podcast or tell your friends to podcast. You can subscribe and listen at your convenience. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I appreciate being a part of this community. And thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.